Smoke Jensen, Esteban Carbone, and Alfonso Lares rounded the corner of the Plaza de Armas to find themselves confronted by some 20 men. Several bore torches that wavered in the night breeze. The three in front carried old, battered weapons, two shotguns and a rifle, Smoke noted. The rest had machetes, scythes, and other edged weapons. Their faces were taut with determination and anger.
Who are you? And where are you going?
That depends on what you have in mind.
We are looking for the policemen. We heard shots.
They are dead. They made the mistake of trying to stop us from leaving the jail.
That is why we are here. We are friends of this man, Alfonso Lares. We know he would never harm his own son. The Jefe and the Alcalde are up to some mischief. Of that we are sure.
That they are.
You know about the prisoners marched off into the mountains. Are they taken there to be killed?
No. Your mayor and chief of police have a silver mine. Strangers are convicted of crimes they didn't commit and taken there as slave laborers.
Slavery is against the law in our country, senor. Your accent, senor. You are not from around here.
I'm an American. My friend here asked me to come help fight against El Rey del Norte.
And who is your friend?
I am called Esteban Carbone.
We are at your service, Don Esteban. What do you wish us to do?
We need to hunt down the remaining police. Root them out of their homes and take them to jail. Once they are locked away, we will go visit the mayor.
At once, Don Esteban. I am called Ernesto Rubio. These men will do what I tell them.
Fine. Arm them from the rack in the jail. Round up the police and do with them as I said. Then join us at the mayor's house.
A groggy Mayor Soto forced open his gummy eyes and blinked. Orange light flickered on the walls of his bedroom. Disoriented, he looked around for his wife. She was nowhere to be seen.
Come out, Mr. Mayor! Limonoso Soto, come out here and surrender to us at once!
Damn them! Damn the peasants! We have been too lenient. They are drunk on tequila and beer. Out of their minds. Where are the police, huh?
Where are the police? What?
Luminoso Soto hastily donned trousers and a shirt. He slid his feet into Toledo-style boots and clomped to the front door. On the way, he saw nothing of his wife.
Go home! Go home at once! You are out after the curfew!
Then his sleep-drugged eyes took in the size of the gathering. Torches guttered over the heads of fully 25 men. Four more stood in front. Blinking, he identified them. Greedy Payosa, Alfonso Lares, the strangers who were jailed, Ernesto Rubio. Lares might be a clown, but he knew all about the mine, and he knew he had never poisoned himself and his son. Suddenly, a skeletal hand of ice clutched at Soto's heart. He was a murderer, or at least complicit in a murder. Bluster leaving him, he raised his hands, palm outward, tried to placate the angry crowd.
Oh, my friends! You all know me! I have brought prosperity to Pueblo de la Paz! I have improved the lot of every one of you! What is its talk of surrender? For what crimes am I to stand accused?
The murder of Carlos Lares, for one.
For the false imprisonment of myself and my friend.
Who exactly are you?
I am called Esteban Carbone. This is my friend from the United States, Smoke Jensen.
A mistake, I assure you! You shall be free to go first thing in the morning. There was some misunderstanding, that is all.
Stop babbling! Come along with us.
My wife! My wife, who will look after her?
She has already gone to the house of her mother. You have nothing with which to concern yourself, Señor Alcalde. Come along peacefully, or we will kick the living hell out of you.
Soto thought fleetingly of darting inside, barring the door against him, and escaping out the back. But it was no use, his common sense told him. Head bowed, shoulders sloped. He stepped out into the cobbled street to meet his fate. Gaston Moro had been awakened by the gunfire that ended the lives of three of his policemen. Unlike Pudgy Mayor Soto, he did not cringe in fear and confusion. His first thoughts went to the possibility that Gustavo Carvajal had gone back on his word. It would be just like him. Moro knew Carvajal from the old days. They had been youthful adventurers together, robbed and terrorized the peasant villages as part of another man's gang. Carvajal went on to run a bandit horde of his own. Gaston Moro thought of himself as smarter. He lived comfortably, got as much in bribes and salary as Carvajal no doubt did from his raids, and he didn't have to take the risk of being shot. Then came this King of the North thing, and suddenly his old friend had taken on a grander stature. He now took tribute from every village in three states, all except for those on the estates of Esteban Carbon and Miguel Martin, fast guns who had retired, married well, and lived the good life. Moro had played on this when he and Soto had made their accommodation with Carvajal. For old time's sake, Carvajal would receive 120 kilo bars of silver per year. In return, he would leave the village alone, let his old friend have his way within the confines of Pueblo de la Paz. Only now, had greed overcome pleasant memories of past outlaw companionship? He had armed himself and waited now in an upper room of his substantial casa on a hillside street of La Paz, ready to meet such an eventuality.
Jefe, come out with your hands up. The mayor is already in jail.
Gaston Moro raised to peer through the firing loop in the shutter that closed off the second floor window. What he saw chilled him. Torches spluttered and nickered fitfully in a rising breeze. He recognized a dozen citizens standing in the narrow, winding street outside his home. Ernesto Rubio appeared to be leading them. Then he saw the two strangers he had arrested that morning. They were supposed to be in jail. Something had gone wrong. Moro tore himself away from the hypnotic vision of supposedly cowed citizens armed and aroused outside, and he took the rear stairway to the ground floor. A smaller portal gave access to the alley behind his house. He checked the peephole and opened the door to admit two policemen.
Oh, we must fight for our lives. The people have gone crazy. They have taken everyone else to jail.
What's this about?
That boy who died. And they know about the mine. They are dangerous, I tell you.
Nothing to worry about. By daylight, they will have run out of energy. We can recover then. Quick! Shoot a few of the fools, and the rest will scatter like chickens.
Swiftly, the terrorized policemen rushed to do their chief's bidding. Through the cloud, Gaston Moro and his corrupt policemen saw a tall figure, sided by two short ones.
Don't just stand there! Shoot them!
That left Chief Gaston Moro alone. Frantically, the corrupt chief of police waved his small caliber revolver in the air as Smoke Jensen advanced on him. One gloved hand slapped the .32 from the chief's hand. Not finished yet. Moreau's years as a bandit served him now. He pulled the knife from the top of one boot and took a wild slash at Smoke's exposed belly.
That was really fucking dumb. I think we can go to the mine now.
Five men led by Carbone approached the front gate to the mine. Fires had been lit in a scattered pattern. Their fitful light and a stiffening breeze allowed a clear view of the compound, and it prevented any chance of escape by the slave labor inmates. Carbone halted his followers and they spread out, facing an equal number of guards on the opposite side of the fence.
Are you from LA?
No. We've come to tell you, you are out of a job.
Huh? How is that, hombre?
The owners of this mine, who pay your wages, are in jail. They are charged with slavery.
These men here are being convicted by a court and sentenced to hard labor. There is no slavery. It is against the law in our country.
Open the gate.
Who are you to give me orders?
Esteban Carbon y Ruiz.
An old man who has hung up his guns. A haciendado with soft hands and no stomach for a fight. Go home to your estancia and play with the women, Don Esteban.
I had hope that you would not be so eager to die, hombre.
Carbone's left and right shotguns taken from the jail boom, and a side of a buckshot laid down three of the other guards. The fifth turned tail and bolted into the greater safety of numbers. Carbone took note of muzzle flashes from the uphill side of the compound and smiled in satisfaction. Smoke Jensen hugged the cheek plate of his Winchester stock to his face and sighted in on a bull of a man who appeared to be in charge at the mine. From this range, it was going to be an easy shot. Almost at once, the boss guard went to the ground, shot through the hips by a fat 45-7500 express slug. At once, the other warders scattered out of the vulnerability of firelight. From here on in, it was going to be rough. Well spread out, as Smoke had instructed, eight townsmen accompanied him. Smoke saw a guard in the tower take aim in front of the compound and brought the Winchester to his shoulder. That got noticed from the hard cases nearest to the back of the mine property.
Everyone down! Crawl forward to the fence!
Townsfolk obeyed at once, grateful for a way not to provide an attempted target. At a crouch, Smoke led the way. He reached the fence and found it to be what farmers in the States had taken to calling hog wire. Big 6-inch open spaces formed by twisted interlaced wire. Smoke grabbed hold of the wire and applied all of his considerable strength. Slowly at first, then with a surge, the wire bent to their powerful effort. Once inside the compound, the fighting grew close. Knives and six guns against clubbed rifles. Advancing with his volunteers, Smoke saw the head guard roll over and prop himself up on one elbow. He had fisted a .45 and sought a good target.
Some people never learn.
Smoke stepped up close behind the murderous warder. Smoke regretted having to kill the men. They were only hired punks, not soldiers of El Rey del Norte. If they had sense enough to give up, they'd be left free.
Stop fighting! Your bosses are locked up. You have nothing to fear from us. Give up and go free.
Gradually, a slackening in the melee could be noted. Smoke smiled to himself. Carbone had definitely not lost it.
Throw up your hands! Stop fighting!
Quickly, the men of Pablo de la Paz set about freeing the victims of greed. When they lined up outside, Smoke and Carbone addressed them, and quickly learned that every one of them was willing to fight alongside the men that had just returned their freedom.
What now, compañero?
I think it's time we delivered our new recruits to your rancho, don't you?
Seguro. Si. We can ride out within half an hour.
See to it.
They kept with Smoke Jensen's plan. Climbing higher into the Sierra Madre Occidental, a small column of volunteers came to a place where the road split. Carbone studied the map he carried in his mind.
This left-hand track leads eventually to my ranch. Ernesto Rubio is a trustworthy sort. I suggest we send the recruits on south to the ranch. My segundo can take care of housing and training them.
And we go where?
This is the long way around, but it leads eventually into the state of Aguascalientes, near Martin's Estancia. It is not a well-traveled road, and we should get by without being noticed.
I like that. I've always been a strong believer in surprise. Odds are that if we're both out of sight long enough, this Carvajal will start to think I've turned tail and headed back north. By then, we should have enough men ready for a fight.
The two friends watched the former slaves depart. Then, they gathered up their pack horses and moved out at a brisk trot along the spiny ridge of a lesser sierra. High above, an eagle circled. Somewhere below, a bird of prey would be motionless in fearful anticipation of the sharp talons that could close on their small, furry bodies and carry them off to feed a brood of chicks. Smoke Jensen watched the magnificent bird as it soared and dipped in the current sent up from the sun-drenched slopes of pine and balsam. Cedar trees gave off their pungent odor, which invigorated the big mountain man. With each passing hour, Smoke Jensen felt more at home in these rugged escarpments. He made careful, unconscious note of terrain features. Never again would he be a stranger here. Neither man broke the companionable silence until they halted to rest their horses and nibble on cold rations.
Over beyond this rampart, to the north, 100 leagues, is Canon del Cobre. It is spectacular. Larger even than Canon Grande in Arizona.
That would be a sight worth seeing.
It is very rich in copper ore.
It is actively mined?
No, the terrain is too rugged.
Well then, maybe it'll last for a while longer.
Smoke Jensen and Esteban Carbone rode out of the mountains into the broad, fertile central highlands south of Zacatecas 3 days later. Carbone waved a hand to encompass the upland plateau.
It is like this from here through Aguas Calientes and northern San Luis Potosi. Then the mountains again, and then beyond them, Mexico City. We are not far from Limosna. We can stay there for the night.
Will we be able to resupply?
It is likely. Limosna is a fairly large town.
What does the name mean?
Charity. Perhaps it is a good sign, amigo. Como no?
We'll hope so, but reserve judgment.
Always the cautious one.
It's kept me alive on a good many years.
I will never forget that lesson, Smoke Jensen. All my life, I shall remember my carelessness.
Carbone, Esteban, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to criticize.
They rode into Limosna in an atmosphere that could accompany a funeral. No children romped and played on the streets. Only a couple of shaggy dogs raised lazy heads as they passed by. Here and there, a window blind flicked aside to allow the occupant to watch them guardedly.
Somehow I do not get the feeling the people are friendly.
We'll find out soon enough. There's a posada up ahead.
Puerto del Sol. Oh, there must be 1,000 posadas named Gate of the Sun in Mexico. One would think that the people with the romantic soul of Spain in them could be more original. We'd better find out if they have room for us.
Inside, they spoke with the owner of the small hotel and secured themselves 2 adjoining rooms, and both men paid for their lodging. They carried their gear to the rooms indicated and stored it in large armoires. After stabling the pack horse, they set out to locate an outfitter or suitable shops to replace their missing supplies and another horse. One square block was formed of wall-to-wall shops facing outward and inward on a large central courtyard. The sign over the tall, arched, wrought-iron entrance to the interior declared it to be El Mercado Central. Stalls lined the center of the courtyard, the largest store occupying a corner of the outer ranks of merchants, advertised cooking utensils and camp gear. Smoke and Carbone entered.
Buenos tardes, señores. How may I help you?
We have a list. Some pots, a skillet, a grill, an open fire trestle, 2 big spoons, a tent. Also your advice on who has least weevils in his flour. Where to get the best in smoked meats, dried beans, coffee.
I am sorry, but you will have to go elsewhere. Your custom is not desired here.
What do you mean?
Exactly what I say. You are Carbone Way Ruiz, verdad? The renegade? I will sell you nothing.
Why is that?
Limosna has El Rey del Norte as patron. We are loyal to him. His enemies we spit upon.
Perhaps you would like to start by spitting on me?
Get out of my tienda, or I will call on others who will remove you.
During their stroll through the town to the Mercado, Smoke Jensen had noticed several men staring suspiciously at him. Since entering the store, several had gathered in front, peering through the windows. Now, some dozen hard cases joined the throng, their cold black eyes fixed on the entrance to the shop. Before Smoke could advise his friends of their presence, 3 of them entered and leveled cold stares at the pair of gunfighters.
You are not welcome here, gringo. Get out of here while you're still alive, and get out of town.
One of the bandidos walked up to the Mexican gunfighter and drew a finger across his throat. Carbone knew exactly what that sign meant. He did not like it one damn bit.
Draw!
What have you done, senor?
Something that needed to be done. Dios mío, Smoke!
Carbone realized that Smoke Jensen was no longer in the store. Smoke had a hole in his hat brim and another through a trouser leg. 5 men lay huddled in death, pools of blood forming around them, and left 4 standing. Carbone came rushing out onto the porch and laid to rest a nattily dressed bandito garbed all in black with silver conchos and braid trim. In the same instant, Smoke dropped 2 more. The remaining member of Carbajal's squad of killers decided to seek safety elsewhere. He ran blindly for 2 blocks to where the horses had been tied up, and then mounted and swiftly galloped out of town.
I could never tolerate rudeness.
Nope. Not from the likes of this trash. We best tidy up, eh?
Working together, after filling cylinders with fresh rounds, Smoke and Carbone attacked the bodies along the gutter and then went into the store.
Now, before we were so rudely interrupted, I had placed an order.
You
You killed them all?
No. One got away.
Meanwhile, smoke had drifted toward one corner of the establishment, where he saw a group of shelves that displayed paper-bound books. Curious, he perused the titles. It taxed his Spanish, but he made out most of them. Love for Gloria and Guadalajara Romance were two titles. Then he came upon one that caused him to crack a broad white smile. Las Aventuras de Smoke Jensen. He recognized the name of the author. The book was a reprint of one of the penny dreadfuls published some years ago in the States. Smoke plucked it from its place and carried it to the counter. There he showed it to the proprietor. The man glanced at the cover and started to turn away.
It is not for sale to you.
Smoke plunged up the front of the merchant's collarless shirt and yanked him around close.
Your soy Smoke Jensen, motherfucker.
Jesus, Maria, Jose. Of course, gentlemen, of course. Your order will be filled with dispatch.
I ain't gonna!
The words fairly exploded from Bobby Harris as he stood in his underdrawers beside a huge galvanized tub. He and Sally Jensen were in the wash house behind the comfortable home at Sugarloaf. Steam rose from the water, prepared on the low two-burner Acme wood stove and a pair of large copper boilers. The chill mountain air caused Bobby to hug his bare chest in an attempt to keep warm.
Yes, you are.
I done took a bath day before yesterday.
And you'll take one today.
And I washed off down at the corral yesterday. Besides, it's cold.
It will get colder. Besides, there's a fire going, and it'll be warmer after I leave and close the door.
I ain't dirty. Don't see no reason to risk getting the pneumonia by doing a dumb thing like taking a bath in this weather.
I thought that you were a brave boy.
I am. Brave enough not to have to take a sissy bath every day.
I take a bath every day.
Yeah, and you're a girl. Taking too many baths makes a feller weak.
I'll tell you something else. So does Smoke, when he's at home or in a town where he can.
He does?
He certainly does.
It sure don't weaken him none.
I doubt very much that it does.
Without another word, as Sally quietly left the washout, Bobby peeled out of his topless long johns and jumped into the steaming water. They made their explanation to the police when the gray-clad officers at last arrived, long after the shooting had ended. The sheer number of bodies argued in favor of the version of events given by Smoke Jensen and Esteban Carbone. Encouraged by the presence of the two famous gunfighters, the store owner found nerve enough to verify their story. He even went as far as to identify four of the dead men as members of El Rey's bandit team. Reluctantly, the police released Smoke and Carbone. Brief stops in several other shops and the main marketplace quickly filled their requirements and they returned to the inn. There, Smoke and Carbone ate a hot and rilling meal, washed down by plenty of the local beer. After cigars on the patio, they retired to their room. Late that night, a small sound awakened Smoke Jensen. He came fully alert out of a sound slumber, as was his nature. Careful not to make any noise that would betray him, he listened in the dark for any indication of the danger that jangled in his head. Smoke fisted his .44 Colt and made hasty preparations. Hot lead slammed into the huddled figure in the bed. The assassins entered in a rush. The leader made rapid strides to the bed and threw back the bullet-punctured sheet.
Buenas noches, you sorry sons.
None of the trio moved. Vaguely, he had a recollection of hearing similar sounds of combat from the room next door.
Carbone.
Smoke went cautiously to the door and peered around the casing. No more nasty surprises on the balcony. Still barefoot, in long johns and nothing else, Smoke edged along the outer wall to the door that led to Carbone's room.
Carbone!
Si, amigo! Come on in!
Smoke found three bodies sprawled in death, a reproduction of what he'd left behind in his room. Carbone sat upright in the middle of his bed, his .45 in his right hand.
You heard them too, eh, amigo?
Just in time. They're Carvajal's men, of course. I think we should have a talk with the innkeeper.
Perhaps we should get dressed first.
Carbone Carbone reined in at the edge of a haphazard cluster of small adobe buildings and pointed to a tall cairn of native stone.
That is the marker. We are near the Tropic of Cancer, amigo. From here on, the land becomes semi-desert again, and tropical, down out of the mountains. There is even jungle.
I find that not at all comforting, Carbone. I'll take the mountains anytime.
We head due south from here to Martin's Rancho. The state of Aguascalientes is within half a day's ride.
We're going to the headquarters?
No. First, we stop at the village of Merced. There's nothing else between here and there.
Mercy, eh?
Yes. The whole name of Martin's village is Nuestra Señora de la Merced, Our Lady of Mercy. But that's too much of a mouthful for even those born to Spanish, so it's called Merced.
I hope Martin has shown more mercy than whoever owns this village.
Smoke looked around at the scattering of low adobe huts, the narrow, rugged street that divided them. It was a village without a name. Smoke had already noted suspicious eyes watching them from behind drawn shutters. The cantina, or whatever passed for one, had a rank, fetid odor. When the dismounted had entered, Smoke took a note of the man in a white suit, black trousers, and a big floppy charro hat, who bolted from the tienda next door and galloped off full tilt to the northwest. He called Carbone's attention to the messenger.
One of Carvajal's men.
So I had it figured. Are we staying here long?
Only to rest the horses. Refresh ourselves.
Smoke made tracks for a small table where Carbone ordered beer for them both. He brought tepid bottles to the fly-speck dotted table and produced a sardonic smile.
The cucarachas must run foot races up the walls.
Cockroaches. Not my favorite people.
You're close. We do have some people here we call cucarachas. It's from the song. La cucaracha, la cucaracha, ya no coca maniar. La cucaracha, la cucaracha, marijuana cuforma.
Loco weed. I knew a fella once. Got taken by the stuff. All he wanted to do was smoke it, chew it, stop eating altogether.
Did it kill him?
No. Some Blackfoot warriors got to him while he was out of his head on the stuff and served him right.
Let's talk of more pleasant things. You should know, for instance, that Martin has a bull ranch.
Bulls, not steers.
Fighting bulls. Oh, we are both aware of your feelings for animals, amigo. Here is a way of life, a custom, a tradition. The true aficionados look upon the Fiesta Brava as a sort of morality play. Good triumphing over evil. The God-given mind being superior to brute strength. Ah, I see you don't agree.
I don't, nor do I approve. But this is your country, and when in Rome...
Enough said. At least that is out in the open now. Martin has three of the most beautiful children you will ever see. The boy has his father's shoulders already. He's going to be tall, lean, a bon pistolero. Only Martin won't let him pursue that profession.
The pair talked for an hour and ordered plates of beans with cheese, it turned out to be goat cheese, and some stringy roasted meat Smoke hoped he would never be able to identify. Then they made ready to go.
We should see the village by now.
Might be well for me to scout ahead some.
We'll both go. Split up and come toward the village from different directions.
You think Carvajal might be around?
It could be.
They swung left and right of the roadway. Smoke headed west for a half mile before he turned south again. He crested a rise and saw far ahead the spire of a church. Somehow looked odd, the dome skewed to one side. He advanced at a walk. Clear, sharp eyes took in every detail of the terrain. Nowhere did he see the sign of a man. He negotiated a saddle in the rolling ground where a lone mimosa stood stark against the skyline. Now streaks of gray and black stood out clearly against the pale blue of the subtropical sky. One of them wavered tenuously beside the bell tower of the church.
That's right, boy. There's been some trouble up ahead.
He made the outskirts of Merced without taking sight of Carbone. Several buildings had collapsed in on themselves. Smoke from recent fires still spiraled into the air. A deadly silence held over the ruins of the village. Ahead, on the right side of the Plaza de Armas, fire-scarred walls of the church stood out in stark warning. Black smudges on white plaster gave testament to the fury of the fire that had burned within. Rafters had been consumed, and the roof had fallen in. Stained glass windows had burst from the intensity of the heat. Yet the holy place still stood. Smoke sensed movement to his left and swung that way. Carbone waved to him and advanced down an intersecting street.
We got here too late.
Just in time. Two more guns wouldn't have done a lot of good.
They proceeded to the center of town. Smoke soon noted that not all of the inhabitants had been killed, captured, or run off. The Cantinero still conducted business outside his gutted establishment. He stood casually, polishing the glass, behind a wide plank supported by empty beer barrels. A canvas awning had been rigged to provide shade.
Bueno tarde, señores. It is not much, but it is mine. For you, the first beer will be only 5 pesos.
Ladrone! Exploiter of the poor! 50 centavos, not a cent more!
Oh, Don Esteban Carbon! I did not know it was you. Of course, for you and your friend, there is no charge.
Gonzalo Ortiz, you are shameless and a thief. What has happened here?
Need you ask? Gustavo Carvajal, may his sore roast in hell, paid us a visit. The patron and the armed men were not close by. Those hijos de cinco bandits burned down the town. They shot many men and took the young women. Everyone else is too afraid to show themselves. When we heard hoofs, they ran to hide.
I see. Come out now. This is Esteban Carbon y Ruiz. It is safe, my children. Come out.
Gradually, the frightened villagers began to poke their heads from hiding places among the rubble. Several younger men came timidly forward. Soon a few women showed themselves, black rebozos covering their bowed heads. Finally, a handful of children popped from the ruins and ran shyly to their mothers' sides.
Carvajal will be made to pay for this.
Well, this we know. Only we're so helpless, unarmed and untrained, and there are so few young enough to carry the fight to the blasphemy of all blasphemies.
Do you want to learn?
Who is your friend, Don Esteban?
Smoke Jensen. He is a famous gunfighter from Los Estados Unidos. Surely you have heard of him.
Oh, see, I have heard from the patron of his friend with the so fast gun. It is true you have killed 500 men, Señor Jensen.
No, not by a long sight. Though more than goods for a man's soul, I can assure you.
Now then, has anything been done to organize a cleanup? To provide guards for the village?
What for, Don Esteban? There's nothing worth Carvajal coming back for.
You're still alive.
And willing to fight.
Good, good then. I suggest you make yourself the new owner of one of these weapons we took from some of the misguided men in Limosna. 6 of them.
18 altogether. They won't be needing them anymore. Take one and some ammunition, then tell your friends. We'll show you how to fight with them.
Lowering westward, the sun slanted the shade of Ortiz's canvas roof far out into the street. Under Carbone's direction, work teams labored at removing the rubble and clearing side streets. They stopped frequently to wash out the taste of dust and ashes. The women worked lovingly on the interior of the church. Smoke Jensen had taken the young men who had selected 6 guns and rifles from the supply obtained in Limosna. At the edge of the village, he set up a line of damaged clay pots as targets and began instructing them in the use of their new weapons. It proved a more difficult task than he imagined. Not 5 minutes into his careful lecture, an accidental discharge nearly took the big toe off one of his pupils. But slowly and surely, under Smoke's watchful eye, each of the young men was able to hit a small clay pot at the range of about 50 yards. Smoke nodded his satisfaction. Smoke looked up to see the familiar, tall, dignified figure of Martin riding toward him at the head of a sizable number of men. A smile brightened his face for the first time since arriving in Mercy.
We meet again, old friend. I am sorry it is under such circumstances.
And I'm glad to be able to help out, Martin.
I see you have gotten to the crux of our problem. These men are farmers, vaqueros, herdsmen, tenders of flocks, tradesmen. They are not gunfighters. All must learn a new skill.
They seemed willing enough.
Having one's home burned around one's ears tends to encourage such zeal. I am glad you are here. Now we can concentrate on carrying this fight to Carvajal.
I suggest we meet at the Catena. Hold a council of war.
Yes, a good idea. Diego, go find our friend Carbon and bring him to the Cantina. Is it still standing?
Not so as you'd noticed. Your man, Ortiz, has set up outside. Some of the men have rescued tables and chairs. We'll be comfortable enough.
They settled down to a table 10 minutes later. After listening to an update on Carvajal's activity since Carbon left for the border, the three gunfighters, along with Pablo Alvarez, Martin Segundo, sat in silence, digesting the import of this news.
I have a few ideas on how to deal with this bandit scum.
Let's hear them, by all means.
First off, we send out men who know the country to scout out Carvajal's main camp.
Consider it done. Alvarez, take 5 men, good ones, and trail the bandidos to their lair. Send 1 man back by midnight, another at dawn. We want to know everything we can find out.
Si, patrol.
Smoke talked for 10 minutes, laying out his plans of ambush, fright, tactics, and confusion. All schemes that had worked well for him in the past. Smiles of renewed confidence and expectation bloomed on the faces of his friends. For all their deprivation, the people of Merced put out a fine feed for the men who had come to avenge their losses. Although inexperienced in fighting with firearms and facing an organized force, the volunteers from Martin's other villages and the ranch put aside their uncertainties to belly up to mounds of carnitas, chunks of pork deep-fried in huge copper cauldrons that let the wood smoke of the fire curl and lick over the brown lumps, giant bowls of beans, and ample stacks of late-season corn boiled in blackened tubs. While Smoke chomped on one of the savory sandwiches, he spoke earnestly with Carbone and Martin.
I want to take your men through more detailed shooting instructions. If they're going to operate on their own, they'll need to handle their guns as second nature.
It's hard to teach peaceful peons to be aggressive.
True. And those who are mostly Indio still believe it is the report of the gun that knocks a man down.
You're kidding me.
Not at all. Believe it or not, it's a holdover from the days of the conquistadores. The Aztec and Mestec brujos, their medicine men and priests, told them that was so. And the belief has lasted until now.
Only the Yaquis and Apaches in Sonora seem to know better.
All the more reason for heavy training.
Smoke carried through on that idea early the next morning. Standing in front of a line of volunteers, he paced back and forth.
Aim shots are what counts. There's more air out there than meat. Another thing, I want you to forget all you have learned about the sound of a weapon's discharge during the killing. It doesn't knock people down. A man has to hit what he aims at with a bullet to stop an enemy. Watch. I'm going to fire 5 shots into the air. Keep your eyes on those clay targets.
In the silence that followed, the students looked at the undamaged pot shards.
You have to hit what you shoot at to have any effect.
For the remainder of the morning, Smoke continued his instruction. By the end of the session, Smoke favored him with a smile. Most had been able to at least nick their targets.
We'll do more of this tomorrow. Now it's time to eat.
Halfway through the meal, Alvarez fogged into town, his horse well lathered, tail steaming behind flying hooves.
We have found them.
Good. Where?
There is a wide, deep valley up in the mountains to the west. It is not easy to find, but there are no trails.
Except for the one Carvajal's men made going there.
See, that is true. You know the peak called Cabeza del Borrego?
Yes, the sheep's head. Is this camp far from there?
Perhaps 3 leagues to the north, then into the Sierra. The trail is harder to follow in the mountains. We are used to looking for stray cattle, not men who can be clever and hide their tracks.
I understand. You have done well.
And I think it's time to go get a look at Carvajal.
You will take some of the men?
No. I can move faster and have less chance of being seen if I go alone.
This man is dangerous.
That's something we can agree on. I'm only going to watch him, learn. They'll not see me. I'll be in the mountains and right at home.
Cook fires nickered randomly among the small army of bandits in the hidden valley, secure in the folds of the Sierra Madre Occidental. At the largest, an elaborate pavilion had been erected. It resembled one of those fancy tents depicted in medieval paintings. Pennants fluttered from the spike-topped center pole from each corner. It was square, about 20 feet on a side, with a scalloped overhang from the roof. Inside, painted hanging divided the tent into private sleeping quarters and a rudimentary office. A trestle table and a huge throne-like chair occupied most of the public area. Gustavo Carvajal sprawled in the seat of honor, his face illuminated by candles and wrought iron sconces rammed into the ground before the flooring had been laid out. Yellow light reflected from the rings that adorned each of his fingers.
Ah, they are beautiful, are they not, Regales? This one was taken from the Padre. He squealed like a pig when Montes ripped it from his hand. Said it was his ordination ring. Too bad, no?
Yes, they are nice. But don't you think that they might get in the way of your gun hand?
Okay. Why would I need to use a gun? I have all these fine warriors to protect me. Now, what of the loot taken from the church?
The door to the tabernacle, it is heavy, of pure gold. Also the chalices, gold and silver. There is much gold and jewels from the statue of Our Lady, and a bag of coins.
Oh, how much?
We have yet to count them, Excellency.
Do so, right now.
Quickly, Regales went to the other two lieutenants, and they stacked all the coins in their respective sizes, determining the full amount that had been stolen. He returned to report to Carvajal.
500 pesos, Excellency. Not a fortune, but plenty for so small a village church.
Go on.
There are crosses of gold and other items, perhaps 2,000 pesos worth.
What about the rest?
Outside, Excellency. There are boats of cloth, boots, saddles, tools, ammunition, liquor, and the women. 15 young women, Excellency.
Oh, how young?
From 12 to 25. None have started to go to fat.
I will take my pick later. Then the men can have the rest. Tell me, the youngest ones, do they have pleasant shapes? Nice nalgas?
Now they are more shaped like boys, Excellency. There are others, though, still tender, that will please you, I am sure.
Well then, on with it. How much do you value the things taken from the village?
Well, I would say at least 20,000 pesos. We can use the food and ammunition. There were no guns that we found. The rest can be sold. The money used to pay the men. With those toros we sold, we are able to keep ahead of expenses for at least 3 months.
Good. I like to hear that. We will grow stronger, you know. Men are coming to us nearly every day. They know where the power lies.
What plans do you have for Martina Garcia's other villages, Excellency?
We must wait and see about that. After all, the borough may see the light now and give in.
Carvajal and his band of ruthless predators were just about to find out how much safer when Smoke Jensen arrived in the area. It had taken him until mid-morning the next day to reach the craggy granite outcropping called Sheep's Head. He halted there, munched on cold tortillas and beans, and dried powdered beef called machacha, washed down with long drafts of water. He rested sidewinder, then changed out of boots into soft moccasins and a dark green shirt and tan vest. Then he stowed his hat in a saddlebag. He wound a green and brown bandana around his head and studied the results in the reflection from a stream that meandered out of the mountains ahead. Satisfied he would better blend with the terrain, he turned Sidewinder northward to parallel the lofty range of the Sierra Madre. Nightfall caught him an estimated half a league from the turning point. Smoke made a cold camp and soon dropped into a light trail sleep. He awakened refreshed, a vague demand for coffee teasing in his head. He would have to forego that pleasure. With dawn spreading pinkly out of the east, he saddled Sidewinder and rode on. A broken branch of the chaparral provided Smoke the first clue to the outlaw's trail. More disturbed underbrush led him onward. He encountered his first hoof prints after he had selected a likely avenue and turned west. Encouraged by this, he pressed forward. 2 hours later, his keen sense of smell alerted him to the odors of cooking food. The mighty King of the North had not been that clever in selecting this hideaway. Smoke had found it easily. then he was accustomed to tracking Blackfoot and Cheyenne warriors who left no trail at all. Smoke gauged the steepest of slopes that had become canyon walls and settled on the right side. Within minutes of leaving the one-time trail, he had disappeared into a heavy screen of trees. Feeling more at home with each passing minute, Smoke let his imagination range over what he might accomplish. He kept a tight rein on the more outlandish ideas that presented themselves. Through it all, he kept alert for any sign of the enemy. He came upon the thin white plumes from cooking fires before he expected it. Some 20 minutes meandering through the pine forest had brought him to a broken-off ledge that provided a clear view of a moderate-sized valley. Hunkered down, Smoke peered over the rim at the barbaric display below. Carvajal's army had fashioned rude shelters of brush and pine boughs. Men swigged from bottles of tequila, scooped morsels of food from pots. The woman's pleas went unnoticed by the outlaws. Smoke silently cursed the animal who had had his way with her, conscious of the futility of that. He eased a pair of field glasses to his eyes, and he made note of the man's face when he was summoned from his pleasure in late afternoon to ride guard on the camp. A smile creased Smoke's weather-seasoned face. Maybe his anger wasn't so futile after all. He kept the offender in sight until certain of the sector he would patrol. Then he slid back from his observation point and rejoined Sidewinder. Now, he had to wait until darkness fell. Smoke Jensen's premonition proved right. Although the bandit chieftain maintained a loose net of sentries, men ride and watch around the valley rim, he apparently had not yet established a set schedule. Individuals among the army of hard cases rode out to relieve a comrade whenever the mood struck them, or someone with more authority told them to. So far, the bandito that Smoke had targeted had not been replaced. He rode with his head down, face in a pool of shadow from the huge sombrero he wore. Riding along a well-defined track, he let his horse have its head while he took short nips from a bottle of tequila. Smoke ghosted along with only a thin screen of scrub and trees between him and the Mexican gun hawk. Satisfied he knew the routes taken by all the watchers, Smoke decided the time had come. He urged Sidewinder through the trees to an open spot beside the trail. There, he shook loose a large loop of braided leather lariat. Smoke dropped to the ground and swiftly closed along the taut rope, stuffing a handkerchief into the man's mouth. He quickly tossed the other end over a branch on a nearby tree and heaved, lifting the man up into the air. Smoke tied off the end of the rope, then walked right in front of the strung-up bandito.
I have a message for you to give to Carvajal. Tell him that his days of playing as king are over. Tell him that I'm coming for him.
Silently as he had come, Smoke Jensen faded into the darkness. He retrieved his Appaloosa stallion and headed off for his second encounter of the night. He found his next choice with little difficulty, clomping along noisily on a swayback horse. The bandit gnawed on a rolled tortilla filled with what smelled like roasted goat. His indolence proved deceptive, however. When Smoke made his move, the man dropped his hand to his six-gun with surprise and speed. He had it nearly clear when the tip of Smoke's buoy pierced his chest and sliced through his heart.
Ah, well. I'll leave another message with the next one.
Smoke came upon the third one right where he expected him. But one surprise did greet him. The bandit sat slumped in his saddle, chin on chest, sleeping away the boring hours. Macabre sense of humor assailed the mountain man's spirit in Smoke. He eased up beside the drowsing man and gave him a solid rap on the skull with the barrel of his .44 Colt. Then, he swung the helpless gunny into a tree like the first. Smoke went to the groggy man and bent low.
Tell Carvajal that if he is Montezuma, I'm his Cortez.
Slowly, the night wore on. Not surprisingly, considering the lack of discipline in the camp, none of Smoke's victims had as yet been discovered. No one had even come out to relieve them. smoke nearly bumped into the next guard.
Hola, compañero! You come at last! Have a drink before I go!
Thanks, but I prefer bourbon.
Smoke stuffed the muzzle of his .44 Colt into the mouth of the hard case.
Now, you will do exactly as I say. Unbutton your trousers and shirt. Do it!
The bandit complied. By then, Smoke had his captive's neck scarf wadded, and he replaced his gun barrel with it.
Take off your shirt. Slowly. No funny moves.
The man quickly did so.
Stand up and pull down your trousers.
Eyes fixed on the deadly Colt, the man did as instructed. Smoke prodded him over to his horse. Then Smoke bent low and used his buoy to cut through the crotch of the man's trousers.
Step up there with your right foot in the front of the stirrup. Then swing your left over and settle in.
A little assistance was required to seat the outlaw backward in his saddle. Quickly, Smoke took a short length of rope from his hip pocket and tied the bandito's ankles to the stirrups and joined him under the belly of the horse. He prodded the man in the ribs with the cold steel of his .44.
Hands behind you.
That done, Smoke bound them too. He inspected his handiwork, then stood where the wilted hard case could clearly see him.
When you get back to camp, you tell Carver Hall that he had better abdicate his throne, or I'll be on him like stink on a rotten corpse.
The man nodded vigorously to indicate his agreement. Smoke took up the reins of the outlaw's mount, led it into the trees far enough off the trail to not be readily noticed until daylight. Then he tied it off to a tree. Satisfied with his night's work, Smoke decided he would return to Marison. Long, peaceful sleep. Gustavo Carver Hall's face turned black with rage.
Who was it, Regales? Carbone? Martin? God damn them for this insult.
The men, they said it was a gringo. He spoke Spanish, but they could see he was a Norteño.
He's here, then. This Smoke Jensen. He has come because these Hayos de la Jingada have asked him to come. What is he that he can do this to me?
He is only one man, Excellency. No, that is not accurate. I found out more about this Señor Jensen. In his country, some call him the Last Mountain Man.
¿Qué es esto? Un hombre de la cordillera. What is so important about such a man?
The mountain men were fur trappers and mighty Indian fighters. They lived in the cordilleras of the United States all alone, facing impossible odds and triumphing over them. This Smoke Jensen is said to be the last of their breed. A truly awesome man who has killed nearly 300 men in stand-up fights.
Merda! No man can live through so many gunfights. But what he did to our men, this insult to my manhood, is an abomination. He cannot get away with it. We must make him suffer for this. Only how? Attack Carbone again? Carbone has lost nearly everything. Martine Garcia has much wealth left to him. Yes, we will retaliate against the oh-so-arrogant Martine and bring them all to their knees. I know exactly how to do it. Pick 50 men. They will accompany me on a bold raid against Martine's rancho. It will be the mother of all raids.
Bones sore and muscles aching, Bobby Harris had time to reflect on the fact that riding full-grown horses on the Sugarloaf wasn't exactly like forking his little pony down Trinidad way. His misery even overcame his reluctance to bare his bottom in front of a female woman. All four of his cheeks flushed bright pink at the thought of it.
Ouch! Oh, that's awful!
Oh, hush up and take it like a man. I don't understand why Bert Cocker couldn't take care of this.
Oh, he offered Miss Jensen. Said he'd do it with a pot scrubber.
I can see why you declined.
Did what?
Declined. Said no.
Oh, yeah. I declined that right enough. Ow! Owie! Ooh, that stuff hurts.
If you would have quit at noon when I said you should, you wouldn't be so stoved up.
Bobby had ridden out with the hands for the first time that morning. He had needed help swinging the saddle on a full-grown horse, yet it didn't deter him from earning his keep, as he put it. He walked with a hitch in his get-along when the hands came in for their dinner, but he said nothing, Sally suggested he take the afternoon to rake down the barnyard or some other non-horse-related job, and Bobby had hotly refused.
Oh, I carried my load all right, though, didn't I?
So Bert told me.
Then you don't need to put that stuff on so much.
Bobby was beginning to wonder if coming here was such a hot idea after all. Smoke Jensen rode back to Marisod shortly before nightfall. Already, the steady efforts of the people had made inroads into the devastation brought on by Gustavo Carvajal. He found Carbone and Martine at the resurrected cantina. Smoke told them about the messages he had left for Carvajal.
That ought to drive out any sanity left. I especially like the part about being his Cortez. Any lunatic who thinks he is Montezuma will have a fit over that. Seriously, though, can we get at him? Can we hurt him?
Yes. What we must do first is to get those women out of camp. No doubt Carvajal intends to sell them to the brothels. They have to be safely away before we do any real damage to El Rey. I think the three of us are best suited to that job.
Like the old days, eh, amigo?
Right. Only this time, we don't go in shooting. More about that later. Now, do either of you have access to any dynamite?
No. It is expensive and not too popular in Mexico. We can get gigante.
Not as powerful as dynamite, Smoke was well familiar with the large grain black powder. Done in grains bigger than number 3 mortar powder, the explosives had been used for many years by miners and others before Nobel came up with the idea of stabilizing nitroglycerin with sawdust. Smoke nodded his approval.
Be sure to get plenty of caps and fuses, too. What our volunteers lack in marksmanship, they can make up throwing blasting powder into the camp.
You are so inventive, amigo.
Trying to earn my keep. We'll set off charges once we get out of Carvajal's camp. Gather the men and tell them what's in store. We'll leave at once and infiltrate the valley tomorrow night.
None too soon, believe me.
Suddenly, Alvarez burst into the small canteen. He ran up to Martine.
Oh, Don Miguel, there is terrible news. That bastardo Carvajal and his army have been seen riding toward your hacienda. It is feared that they will attack it.
They're certainly not coming to surrender.
I'll take half of the men and head that way. With them out in the open, it'll be easy pickings. We can cut down the odds, too.
I'll go along, of course.
I counted on that. Let's get going. The sooner we reach your headquarters, the sooner we can hurt Carvajal.